Welcome to Trigger Talk Radio with your host, Dick Kupke. From handguns to rifles and hunting to self-defense, even a bit of politics. It's time to exercise your First and Second Amendment rights. Call and join the conversation, 734-822-1600. And now, your host, Dick Kupke.
Well, good morning and welcome back to Trigger Talk on this January 1st. 2022. So it is 1-1-2-2 out there. How about that? And actually, I have to be forthcoming because if you are listening on shows this Saturday morning here, you'll know that we are actually standing down, I want to say, at Wham Radio, and we are doing pre-recorded or best of shows because we're giving Derek the day off and he totally deserves it. And probably after partying, watching the Michigan game on, isn't that Friday night? Yeah, that's Friday night. And gosh, by now you all know what the score is, and I don't because it's actually Thursday right now. So, but that's just one of the problems of pre-recording a show. So if there's anything major that happened on New Year's Eve, we won't be talking about it today on the show. We'll talk about that next week on the show, okay? So this is our first show of 2022, and this is actually, I think this is, I'm into the 10th year of broadcasting since I started my my first ones with Matt Clark, and then I was doing some regular shows with him, you know, like a half hour out of his time slots that he had, and we'd have a lot of fun doing that. And then it was, I think it was in 2012 that that we did our first actual Trigger Talk radio show. And then I was blessed enough to be offered my own time slots, and then it got expanded to 2 hours, and back and forth a little bit with the times, and now we're running at 2 hours. So we're going to have a lot of fun today. First of all, I'm going to say, and this is my fervent attempt, I promise you, we will be no COVID none of the time, okay? Now, I can't promise you at the top and bottom of the hours when they run news that they're not going to talk about it, but I am not going to talk about it, so no COVID none of the time. Let's see here. Michigan. We have one gun show this weekend, and that is the Lansing Mason Gun Show, which is an outstanding one to go to. It's up, just off of 27 North at Mason. I forget what exit that is, but it is always a good show, and I'm thinking I just may have to go out there this weekend and just walk through a gun show just to start out the new year correctly, okay? So maybe I'll see you out there at the Lansing Mason Gun and Knife Show. That's at the Ingham County Fairgrounds in Mason, Michigan. Ohio's got three of them, the Miami Town Gun and Knife Show and Whitewater Township at the Miami Town Elementary School campus. Isn't that great that they actually allow guns on a school campus? How can that be? Let's see. Then they have the Westland Mall Gun Show, and they have a mall with guns. Oh, that Ohio, they are so crazy. And then they have the Tri-State Gun Show at Lima, Ohio, at the Allentown County Fairgrounds. Missouri's got one gun show, which is the R.K. St. Charles Gun Show, and that is in St. Charles, Missouri. And you know what? And New York has none. So, Mike in Long Island, I'm hoping that you've already moved to Phoenix. If for those of you who are longtime listeners, you know that we have various listeners that call in from different areas of the country. I have some people in Missouri that listen, in California, and Arizona. And actually, Mike from Long Island was my lone New York listener. Well, at least that I know of, listener, but he's moving to Phoenix. He's seen the light. He's going to where they have personal freedoms and gun freedoms and stuff, plus I think lower taxes too, and generally their politicians are better out there. I got to say, even their Democrats, like is at Kristen Cinema. She shows a little bit of promise too sometimes. Not totally, but she's at least reasonable. Now then again, we have some bad Republicans out there too. like remember John McCain, but at any rate, so he's moving out there. So I'm going to go ahead and give an Arizona gun show briefing here. We've got the Lake Havasu Collectibles and Firearms at the Aquatic Center in Lake Havasu. The Crossroads Mesa Gun Show at the Mesa Convention Center. Now, that's actually right by Phoenix right there. So hopefully, Mike, you can get there. And then the Murphy's Yuma Gun Show. Now, that's wasn't there... There was a movie called, like, the 311 to Yuma or 310 to Yuma or something like that. But that always makes me think, I got to believe a Yuma gun show probably has a lot of single-action revolvers and lever-action guns. So maybe, see, now I'm being kind of prejudiced about what kind of guns they use out in Yuma. But they probably have a lot of black guns, too. So anyway, we don't have any new numbers for the CPLs for this month yet. I can say, though, we do have something that we will talk about in a little while, probably in a second segment, third or fourth segment. I'm not sure when we'll get to it. But they did come out with the new yearly report that talks about why, you know, people had their, you know, it's funny, instead of talking about how many good 60, probably over 63,000 people, maybe 70,000 people who got their CPLs, they have to make that report say, well, we have one guy who did not disclose that he was carrying, and so he had a suspension. You know, I mean, they got to focus on the negative, of course. That never was true before Gretchen became our governor, and Nessel, and all of these anti-gun current politicians in Michigan. Let's see. But let's talk about some fun things, okay? What would you do if you are making a gun related resolution? Oh yeah, I know. I want to lose weight so I can carry more ammunition. Oh yeah, that's a good one. Or maybe if I lost weight, I would be able to carry an inside the waistband larger gun than a little gun. Oh yeah, that might be true. Now that's, you know, but what do they say? The weight resolutions usually last about 3 days or something like that. So, but here's a good one. Number one, go to the range more. And, you know, I'd say that almost every year. And I do some years go to the range more than others. This past year, I have gone a few times and enjoyed it very much. I was out, shooting that CX-4 Storm that I got. Yeah, that was fun. Let's see, I was sighting in the 44 Magnum for my son. And let's see, I was sighting in the 50 Beowulf. I shot the muzzleloader some. I had a lot of fun, actually. So, but going to the range more. Well, why should you do that? Well, it depends on where you go. If you have a pass to where you go, like I get an annual pass at Tri-County where I'm a member, and I can go as many times as I want. I could go every day, and it would be free, okay? Well, actually, the pass costs like $75 for the year, but it would be free to go as many times as I want. Now, maybe you're not in that situation. Maybe you have to rent range time. Now, if you live on a farm or out in the country and stuff like that, then you're okay. You can just go out in the backyard and shoot with a safe backstop and stuff. But if you're having to rent range time, like going to Ann Arbor Arms or the firing line or T-Rex or some of the other ones around, then maybe you've got a pass. Maybe you got a monthly pass or maybe somebody listened to my suggestions for Christmas and they bought you some range time, like, oh, 10 hours of range time or something like that, and you get your card punched or something. Well, go to the range more often. And by the way, it is a good idea. You should be going to the range every few months if you are a concealed carry holder, because you should be practicing and keeping your skills fresh, okay? But that's it's not just people who are interested in defensive handgun shooting or defensive shooting altogether. It could be maybe you're taking your home defense shotgun, or maybe you have an AR or a pistol caliber carbine or something where you're going to keep those skills up. Maybe you got a new optic or something. Matter of fact, by the way, I'm going to mention, I got absolutely nothing gun-related for Christmas. I know, gosh, that sounds terrible. But pretty much my family knows that, A, I have everything I need, well, as far as they know, okay. But also, they know that I typically will go out and get whatever I need myself. And so I enjoy, like, I'll tell you what I did get. My kids went together and bought me a, now this could be gun related, well, not really gun related. It could be meat related, because my kids went together and bought me a real nice meat slicer. Yeah, one of those like they use in the deli. And I always think of, now, those of you who were Seinfeld fans will always remember the episode where Kramer got a meat slicer, and it was a very fancy meat slicer, probably fancier than the one my kids got me, but mine is perfect for home usage. And I can use it for I did ham with it and we did roast with it for Christmas. And I've done venison roasts with it. But actually, my old one broke. And I want to say I was very proud of that old one. I had bought it at a garage sale for $5, okay? And it was from a woman whose husband used to use it to process his deer. And I thought, whoa, this is great, $5. And I used that thing for like 5 years, and then it finally quit. So I got a new one for my kids. So I need to – matter of fact, there's – well, actually, it's – today is actually the 30th. So I actually have one more or a day and a half of hunting if I want. Antlerless deer season is still in play. And if I get something, I can use my meat slicer on it. But I did buy myself something gun related. Now, I went out and I was looking at some things, and I've got some get some pellet gun related things and stuff like that, but that's not what this was. I bought myself for that Beretta CX4 Storm a Romeo 5 red dot. And I bought it from my friend John, but John had on it an aim point that he wants back. So yeah, I understand that. It's actually a really cool aim point. It's a military quality SWAT team aim point, actually, that he got. And man, I should have got one of those when he told me, he goes, Dick, they got like a barrel of them here. And I was too quick on the, or too slow on the trigger, let's say. And he got a couple of them, and he bought a couple for some of his friends and stuff like that. But I finally called him and said, hey, John, I'll take one of those. And he goes, oh no, they're all gone now. So I missed that. So instead I got a more modern one. I got a Romeo 5, which I bought one before for a friend. What gun is that on? It's on an AR-15. Because he didn't like the Vortex that I was offering up on it for him. And so I got him a Romeo 5. And then I've always wanted one of those. And it is an outstanding aim point, or red dot. It is a... it's not real big. It's 20 millimeters, so that's like 3/4 of an inch. But it is perfect for a pistol caliber carbine, one of the things I like about it is that it has buttons for on and off, and for its brightness and stuff. But if you leave it on, it will shut itself off, and it senses motion. When you pick it back up, it turns itself back on again. No fumbling for bullets. No fumbling for bullets. Well, this is silly. No fumbling for buttons to try to turn it on when you really need it in a hurry. So I picked it up and boom, it just comes right on. And so I am going to go to the range in the next week and sight that in. But I did get a Romeo 5 and I really like it. And I got to decide, it comes with kind of a stand up mount, and which is actually meant to co-aimed with the AR-15A2 sights, but these CX-4s have an interesting sight on them, and I'm trying to decide if I want it to be co-aligned with those sights or if I want it to be above it. So I actually have an ARM quick release that would raise it about another inch, and I'm going to see if I like that, the feel of it, or if that makes it too proud. So we'll see. I did get myself a gun-related thing. Thank you from Santa Claus. I appreciate it, which is me, by the way. So I was talking about going to the range more, and that might be fun to do. And maybe make a point of trying to go. Just set yourself a reasonable target. Don't say, I'm going to go every week, and then you'll be upset with yourself when you don't go. Say you're going to go every month. Okay, that's a good starting point. And if you beat that and come every other week, great. but the point is that make yourself a reasonable target. That's like losing weight, okay? If you say, I'm going to lose 50 pounds this year, well, you probably won't, okay? However, if you go and, I'm going to lose 10 pounds, okay, well, that's a reasonable goal. And if you exceed it, great. So, start off with going to the range once a month, okay, and then try to do it better than that. Let's see. I got a challenge to you. Decide to buy a different type of gun. What are you talking about, Dick? I mean, why would I want a different type of gun? Well, because the enjoyment of shooting, the enjoyment of shooting sports and gun ownership is a very, very broad type of thing. If you're only shooting a 9mm semi-automatic, then you are pretty limited in what you're doing, okay? Yes, okay, it's good for target shooting. It's good for, self-defense or concealed carry or something like that, but you're not experiencing the broad range that we have. So maybe you should branch out a little bit. Buy a different type of gun. Buy maybe a lever action. And that I was thinking about that this week because I think it was December 20th, 24th, something like that. Ruger just announced its first official announcement of a lever action on the Marlin brand. Remember, thank goodness Ruger bought the Marlin manufacturing, the tooling and machining and the name and the designs and everything on the Marlin rifles. And that includes Marlin bolt actions and different Marlin rifles, but most importantly, Marlin lever actions, which is what everybody thinks of when they think of a Marlin. Well, they came out with their first one. Let me see. I could probably zoom down to it. I was going to save it for a little later, but since I'm talking lever actions. Okay, they call it the Marlin 1895 SBL lever action. Okay, now, first of all, if you know the Marlin 1895, which is a tube magazine side gate loading lever action. This one's nice, okay? And the 1895 is chambered in 4570. Holy cow, what a thumper that is. And that's actually a straight wall pistol cartridge. So technically, that's useful in states like Michigan and Ohio and Indiana, where they allow straight wall pistol cartridges for deer hunting. And what could be better than, I got to tell you, 4570 will take virtually anything in the that you'll find in North America here, including black bears and things like that. But it definitely would be fine for a shorter range up to 200-yard deer hunting situation. And this is a beautiful gun. First of all, it's all stainless steel. Okay, now I know if you're a traditionalist, you go, oh, well, lever guns should be walnut and blued steel, otherwise they don't count. Well, they do count, and actually some of them are actually, matte black now. They actually make tactical ones, believe it or not, but that's not what this one is. This one is stainless steel 4570 side gate loading. Has a big loop on it, not a rifleman type of loop, but almost as big as that, and it's meant to be able to have gloved hands and things in it. It has a gorgeous gray laminated stock, and you know what I'm talking about on laminated stocks, when the graining and the way they're sawn, they're laminated wood is multiple layers, and then when they carve out the stock and stuff, it makes for a gorgeous grain pattern. So it's a gray laminated stock with nice checkering on it, and it's got a nice, and you need this with a 4570, a nice recoil pad on it. It's also got ghost ring sights, okay? So it's got a ghost ring sight in the rear and a high-vis, light gathering tube type front sight, really, really handy to have. And it's got a big Picatinny rail on it, so if you want to put an optic on it, you don't have to try to drill or tap or some of the things that people used to do with old lever action guns. And by the way, one of the things about the Marlins that are nice is that they are side ejecting, so you can put an optic on it without it interfering with the ejection of the spent cartridge. So at any rate, gorgeous gun. So I'm thinking that if you've only got 9mm semi-automatics, you need to go out and get yourself a lever gun or something. You need to maybe there's other type of guns that you might like. Maybe if you're a semi-automatic person, maybe it's time to try a revolver. Oh my goodness, there's a whole ton of decent revolvers out there. Maybe a bolt action, maybe a pump. There are pump guns out there, both pump shotguns and pump rifles. Yeah. They still make pump rifles, okay? And so you can have, and some of them are in 22. Some of them are in, I love the Remington 760 and 7600 series, which is, a heavy caliber, like a 30-06 pump action. That's cool. I've also got them in 300 Savage, too. So, yeah, I like that. So then what else would be fun to do? Well, maybe you can take some of your old guns to the range. Yeah. You got some safe queens in there, don't you? I know I do. And by the way, they're sitting in there going, they see that your guns are sitting in the safe, and they see that safe door open, and they're going, take me, pick me. Yep, I know. I go down and visit my guns. My wife, are you down visiting your guns again? Yes, I am. I hold them. I check to make sure that they're lubed. I do keep a dehumidifier in the safe that needs to be recharged periodically, so I need to make sure that the guns are doing just fine. And so maybe you'd want to take some of your old guns to the range. We'll talk about that in a little more in a few seconds here, because we're coming up to the bottom of the hour. But I've got some more ideas of some things that would be fun to do. Maybe taking out your first pistol, or maybe taking out some antique guns. We'll talk about that when we get back. And we got more. Let's see, what else are we going to talk about? We'll talk about maybe reloading, maybe refinishing. Maybe it's time to talk about some of these. And I know we got to talk about a little bit of politics, okay? I'm trying to avoid it. It'd be nice to start the year out and go, we're going to have a no politics policy, but we really can't do that, because this is going to be a year where politics is important. We've got midterms coming up. We've got, when that happens, you have people making claims to be more strong on gun control and other people who want to get rid of gun control. So we need to be able to talk some politics. Well, this is Dick Kupke at Trigger Talk Radio here at Wham Talk 1600 and 92.7 FM here in Ann Arbor, Michigan. We'll be back in just a few minutes. And we're back, and time for the second segment here. And, okay, so we're talking about 2022 resolutions. And I just talked about taking some of your old guns to the range, okay? So let's take a look at, and by the way, they could also be antique guns at that point. I can look in my safe and see all sorts of guns that are just sitting there, begging, okay, take me, because when you have, if you've only got two or three guns and you go to the range regularly, well, they're going to probably get a regular workout, okay, but I have guns that I don't shoot that often, because I have a lot of guns, and because some of them are purposed. I want to say, you might have a Remington 1100 or something that you shoot trap with, and you go, well, I'm not going trap hunting, or not going trap shooting, or I'm not going bird hunting, I'm not going pheasant hunting, or something like that. So you don't take it out. And actually, you should, but those type of guns, you're better off, like if it's a shotgun, you're better off probably finding a place that has sporting clays. Some of the, gosh, is it Howell? Gun Club has that five station. I mean, there might be some other places you can go where it, because with a shotgun, a paper target or something is not very satisfying and not very challenging. Okay, now you might take out. I do have some home defense shotguns. Okay, I have some short barrel. Well, not too short. They're properly, but they are shorter home defense shotguns with large magazines and ghost ring sights and things like that that don't get shot very often. Those could be fun to go out to a range where, if you've got like where I go at Tri-County, we've got our action bays and stuff like that where you could use a shotgun like that and be able to actually do something with a silhouette target or something like that. But other ones, you. I want to say I have got so many of my old 22s. I've got the first 22 rifle I ever shot, which was a Remington 22 pump, and it's a Fieldmaster. I've got some Remington semi-automatic 22s. I've got some bolt actions. I just brought home my father's. Original Savage, which was a Ranger, was the model number or the model name, Ranger 19, I think it is. But it's like it's got a Sears number on it. So I think, and I looked it up, and it's like an old Savage 80 or 85, 84, something like that. I don't remember off the top of my head, but it's accurate as can be, and it'd be fun to shoot. I did shoot it a couple of weeks ago in honor of my father, and. So it would be fun to go out and shoot. And that one I'm probably going to end up gifting to my oldest daughter because she and Papa had a connection. And so she's going to end up getting probably that. And she's not listening, so she doesn't know that. So I'm not giving away any secrets here. But I have some old Mossbergs that are full size, like a 46 BB, a 44M, a New Haven, something or other, a 14M, 491, all these fun things out there that are just dying to be shot, and they're a lot of fun, okay? So go ahead and take them out. Maybe take an old Mauser out. I've got an old 8mm Mauser. What would be more fun than that? You want to have fun? Take out some of your antique guns and realize not only did they, I want to say a Mauser, that's a 1898 design, okay? Same thing with a Mosin-Nagant, okay? A 9130 is an 1891 design, okay? And you can go out and have a blast with it, literally. And by the way, some of the shorter ones are, you literally have a blast with it, because most of the ammunition that they make, which is 7.62 by 54R for these old Mosin Nagants, okay, which, by the way, is still a modern round in use in the Soviet Union. Well, they don't call it that anymore. Russia and some of the Eastern Bloc states, they still use them. They use them in Dragunovs as snipers. They use them in machine guns, big old machine guns, belt-fed machine guns, just like we still use a Browning 1919 30 cal and a Browning M2 50 cal. We're still using some of these 120-year-old designs, okay? And they're still using those Russian ones. That's why you can still buy the ammo, at least you can right now. Hopefully that we can get that turned around after the midterms when Biden is restricting. You know, that's a bunch of crap where, well, we're going to, we'll teach those Russians not to use chemical weapons against their own spies and poison them. We'll restrict our you guys from importing ammunition. That'll show you. Oh, yeah, somebody else will buy it. And, by the way, the only people you're hurting are the American shooters who can't get cheap ammo to be able to shoot anymore. The steel, you know, the Barnall and Tula and Wolf and all that kind of stuff. So, but if you've got some of it, and I've got some of those spam cans full of it, oh gosh, I bought it several years ago, and what's nice is it's all sealed up in a tin, okay? And you use a can opener type thing. They used to have, like, the keys on them, like sardine cans. And people, if you're younger than 50, you're going, what? A key on a sardine can? What's a sardine can? Okay, yes, they used to, remember you used to take the little key, it was stuck to the top of it and with a little solder, and you'd pull it off, and you'd put it in the tab, and you'd wind it around, and go around, and around, and around, and you would, and then it would open up. Okay, well, all these cans are sealed, and this ammo is as fresh as a daisy. So it's as good today as it was in the 80s when it was made, or the 50s when it was made. Now, you do have to remember, when you're going out and shooting, and if you're using antique guns, if you're using modern ammo, you don't have too much of a problem. But if you're using antique ammo, many of those have what are called corrosive primers, okay? And that is that the primer itself, the material, not the powder, not the gunpowder that it's using, but the primer itself creates potassium salts, little salts that will attach itself to the bore of the barrel and attract moisture. And man, oh man, within a day, you're going to have a rusty barrel. So if you remember, and I talk about this every couple of years when we're talking about antique guns. So if you're out there shooting one of the Mosin Nagants that you picked up, and by the way, talk about a decent investment. I've got some Mosin Nagants that I paid $50 for from Dunham's, from a store. Packed in Cosmoline, okay? And they were re-arsenaled ones. Now, most of the Mosin Nagants were pre-fired and re-arsenaled, but I do have SKS or two that was unfired, okay? And they were cheap when you'd buy these things. I got a 9130 for $79 from Dunham's, and I got, there was a coupon in the Sunday paper for an M44, which is the shortened version of a 9130, kind of like a carbine version of it, complete with a fold-out bayonet and all sorts of stuff, for $49.95, okay? Holy cow, you know what those are going for now? They're going for $300-$400. $400, $500 at a gun show, okay? So that was a good investment, okay? And there's actually, there's a company called Royal Tiger Imports that went over to Ethiopia and found, you know, millions of guns in storage in shacks that are in a dry desert kind of environment that they're like brand new, and they're sending those over. But they are expensive. You go, man, they got Mausers for sale. I wonder what those got. $8.99 or $12.99 or something like that. So you're going, well, I guess the days of the bargains are gone. We all talk. You know how you're old when you go, I remember when, okay? Well, I remember when these things were $50, okay? But if you go back 50 more years to the 1960s, okay, in the 70s, they were selling them in the back of Outdoor Life or Field and Stream or something like that for $19. You could buy them for $19 and they'd ship them to your door in a paper wrapped with string, okay? And they deliver them to your door. The post office would. Well, that looks like a rifle. Yep, boy, that's great that he's getting, a rifle here. Oh, great. But I only paid $19.95 for it. Leave it on the front porch. Okay. I crack myself up sometimes. So at any rate, take out some of those antique guns. Okay, and antique is a relative term. Okay, because you know what. I've got some Remington Nylon 66s that are technically antique guns because they're made in like 1959, okay? So they're over 60 years old. And actually, some of the guns that you can still buy at places like J&G Sales and things like that, if you have a CNR license, which is a curio and relic license, you can buy them directly yourself, okay? Or and even some items if they're over 100 years old. Matter of fact, there was a story I was reading about where a guy had a rifle in his trunk of his car, and the cops stopped him, and they were making a big deal about him having a gun in the, well, technically it's over 100 years old. It was like a 1891 Mauser or something like that, Argentine Mauser or something like that, and you don't even need to, those don't even have to go through an FFL anymore because they're so old, okay? There was actually a story this week where, where was it? Was it Massachusetts or somebody? They made a big deal about stopping a guy and confiscating his pistol and stuff like that. It was a black powder pistol. Those aren't even considered firearms by the ATF, okay? Black powder pistols and black powder rifles aren't. So I want to say, but they are fun to shoot. And so take out some of those antique guns. What other guns would I shoot? Some of my old Savage 99s, the Mausers, the Garand, my M1 carbine's probably sitting there going, take me, because I haven't shot that in a while. So there are so many. And if you decide to take a gun a week to the range, a different gun every week, well, then you could go a couple of years without with different guns, and all of them would be happy, okay? Let's see. What was I going to mention? Here's another thing to start doing for the first of the year is maybe learning how to reload. Maybe did you learn your lesson that this past couple of years that ammunition can be scarce, okay? Well, part of what's happened is, obviously, we've had 20 million new gun owners, okay? I think last year alone we had 8 million first-time gun owners, and we're all competing for the same ammunition. So it's not a big conspiracy and people buying it up and stuff. It's there are more people. If you got 20 million new gun owners out there and they all bought 9mm semi-automatics, you're competing with them for that same ammunition, okay? Well, one thing you can do, especially if you want to be practicing a lot, is learn how to reload your own ammo. You don't need to have a $1,000 automatic press that cranks out 600 rounds an hour or something like that. You can have a blast with a single stage press, and you can sit there and in an evening reload with a single stage press a couple hundred rounds of 9 or 45 or 40 or whatever you want. Now, if you're doing rifle rounds, it may take a little longer because there are more stages to it. In the case of something with a shoulder and lubing them and stuff like that. Okay, but you can still have a lot of fun, and you can get into it for a couple hundred dollars, okay? And now, this year, the availability of powders, and now we're still running low on primers, but I'm told that there's going to be some big announcement in the next week or two at SHOT Show that they're going to, that's the Shooting, Hunting, and Outdoor Trade Show out in Las Vegas, and they're supposed to have it this year. They haven't had it the last couple of years, and so at any rate, they're supposed to have it this year, and there's supposed to be some announcement about primers. So hopefully there's like a new company making primers or something. But everybody's geared up for powder, for casings, for projectiles. And now if they get the primers, then you're going to be able to get the components that you need. So start right now. Start looking to see. You got to get the press first. Then you got to get some dies. You got to figure out how you're going to make a workbench. You're going to end up with a powder measure to be able to measure your charges out. There's all sorts of things. You can start out with a good kit, like one of the Hornady lock and load kits or a RCBS starter kit. You can do well for $279, $300. Okay. And it's enough to get you started. You can actually less if you get a Lee kit. And I started out with a Lee kit, and then I worked up to different things. And I'm still the most automated thing I've got is a Redding T7 turret press, where you can have your dies set up, and then you can rotate it. But I still do it like I'm doing it single stage, where I do it in batches. I will go through and I will clean all my brass first. Then I will decap it all. Then I will, which is punching out the primers and sizing it. Then I will flare all of the case mouths. Then I will, so I do it in batches, okay? You don't have to be doing one of these, and by the way, they're really nice, a Dillon Precision Press or something like that, that is actually automated. Some of them, every time you pull the handle down, it does like 7 different functions. It's like amazing. But I don't recommend that to start out with, because you need to learn the fundamentals of it. And there is nothing more fun than making your first ammunition yourself and going out and firing it. It is a great feeling. Okay, I'm not into casting, but some people get into casting their own bullets. Okay, they use old lead wheel weights, and you can buy lead in places and stuff like that. But that has a whole set of environmental issues you got to be careful of. So I just use precast bullets. So at any rate, so now might be the time to start. You can't wait until we're in our next ammunition shortage, because then it's too late. So you need to plan for these kind of things. So maybe that's one of your New Year's resolutions here. Now, here's one that some people might take exception to. I want to say, if you're a gun guy, okay, or gal, a gun man or woman, a gun binary non-specific gender person, because we don't care. I don't really care what you do with your own personal organs, okay? But the thing is that... So when I say a gun guy, I'm talking generically, okay? So one of the things that you might want to do, especially if you're into guns and if you just bought your first gun, you need to learn about it, read about it, take some training about it, go to the range and learn about it and stuff like that, and focus on that. But if you have multiple guns, and I know many people, even if they've got 5 or 6 guns, okay, they may have an old .22 that they had as a kid that's in the gun safe or in the closet or whatever, probably in a gun safe, and it's sitting there, and it's kind of beat up. Well, that's okay. It can stay beat up. It doesn't hurt it if it's got scratches in it. And you may even like it because that scratch was the time that you were out on your first squirrel hunt, and that's where you drug it across the barbed wire when you stepped over the barbed wire or something like that, okay? Yeah, that's okay. But maybe it's just an old 22 you picked up or somebody gave to you, and it doesn't really have that sentimental attachment to you in terms of how it looks. Well, maybe you should refinish an old gun. What? Refinish? I don't even refinish furniture. What are you talking about, Dick? No, it's a lot different than that. First of all, if you've got an old gun that, I want to say, if it's 50 years old and it's sitting in your safe, you really should periodically take it apart and take it out, take the action, the barrel and the receiver and stuff out of the stock to make sure it doesn't have any corrosion and stuff down there. Because actually the whole outside of it, a lot of people will, with their guns, they'll use a Remoil wipe or they'll use rags and they'll wipe them off. And man, they look great. But if you take it out of the stock, you'll find that underneath, the area where the trigger is, the area where the safety is, the area where it is mounted through the stock, there might be some rust there. Okay, maybe it's got a magazine well there that has some rust there. And you go, oh, man, I need to clean this and oil it and stuff down there. So you should do that anyway. But maybe it's gotten some pitting on it. You want to polish and buff it and blue it. And you can do that yourself. You don't have to have a hot tank for bluing and stuff. You can actually cold blue with some, I like, it's called Oxfo Fate. You know what? In a future show, I'll get into some of the chemicals and things that I use when I'm bluing. Cause I have different type of, chemicals depending on what color I want that barrel to be or that case to be or that strap or whatever case it may be. I use different chemicals to get the color and the finish that I want. But also on the wood, there is nothing wrong. Now, by the way, let's say that you've got a real 1873 Winchester that is in, it's got some wear on it and stuff like that. No, you don't want to do that because those guns have value, okay? I'm talking about a 1960 five Marlin Model 60 or a Glenfield or a Ruger 10/22 or an old Savage or even I've done old Winchesters and Remingtons for my nieces when they were all taking my brother has six daughters and they all went through 4-H and FFA and they did shooting and target shooting and competitions. And every one of them, I got a single action, single shot bolt action and redid it so it looked beautiful and gave it to them so that they would have their own rifle to be shooting with. Okay. Those type of guns that you're going to do that with do not have a whole lot of value. Okay. It may be worth $200. And you know what? It might only be worth $100. And it'll be worth that same $100 or $200 whether you leave it in original condition or whether you decide to refinish it. And if you decide to refinish it, you just may use it more because it's beautiful and you want to take it out. Well, we'll talk about that in a little bit. We'll talk about how do you go about refinishing the stock on it. Now, I've even done some. I did a Marlin AS-330, which was a wood-stocked 30-30, okay? But it had, some weird stuff done to it. It had initials carved in it and embedded in it and stuff. I actually did that one. I sanded it all down, filled it in. I did it in kind of a black matte finish, and now it was, I think it's the first tactical 30-30 out there. My son's got it now. I gave it to him. But you can have a lot of fun, and you don't have to be true to what it was before. You can turn it into something neater. So we'll talk about that in just a few minutes. This is Dick Kupke at Trigger Talk Radio here at Wham Talk 1600 and 92.7 FM. We'll be back with the second hour of Trigger Talk in a couple minutes.
Welcome to Trigger Talk Radio with your host, Dick Kupke. From handguns to rifles and hunting to self-defense, even a bit of politics. It's time to exercise your First and Second Amendment rights. Call and join the conversation, 734-822-1600. And now, your host, Dick Kupke.
And welcome back to the second hour of Trigger Talk Radio here on January 1st, 2022. And we're having some fun. We're talking. Now, by the way, just in case you tuned in and you didn't know I was on for 2 hours, you missed the whole first hour. Where you been? Go to TriggerTalkRadio.com. Go to the 2022 podcast page and you can download these files and listen to it, okay? We've been having fun. Now, this is a pre-recorded show today because it's New Year's Day and because, well, gosh, there are football games to watch. You know, what Theron always says, what time's the game on? Well, everybody would have probably watched the Michigan game yesterday. So I don't, being that it is Thursday when I'm recording this, I don't know what the outcome is. But hopefully Michigan won. I've said, even though I'm a Boilermaker fan, which Purdue played, they either played last night or they're playing today at the Music City Bowl in Tennessee, Nashville, Tennessee. So I'm a Boilermaker fan, but and I mean a super fan because I marched in the band when I was in college, have gone back and marched in alumni band and stuff like that. Haven't lately. I guess I'm feeling a little old for out there marching with a sousaphone, but I'm going to do it again one of these days, okay? Well, at any rate, so there is probably a football game that hopefully we won or lost yesterday. I don't know, and I don't know how Michigan did. Hopefully you did well. Michigan State, when do they play? I don't know. I'd ask Derek, but because we're on pre-recorded here, he's not across from me in the double glass, okay? So at any rate, we're going to talk about more things related to guns. We're going to talk about gun ownership, gun, a little bit of politics in this second hour, because there's stories that are out in the news that I'll talk about. But I was talking about the whole first hour of the show, we talked about New Year's resolutions and things like that. And I was just in the middle of talking about refinishing an old gun. And we'll talk about this more in the future. I don't have all my lists of stuff with me, but I want you to think about this. If you have an old 22, or maybe it's an old 30-30, or an old 30-06, or any of those, you know, might be something oddball, like a 257 Roberts, maybe a Savage 99. But if it could use some improvements in the way it looks, okay, knock yourself out. Feel like you can do that because, you know, people go, oh, it destroys the value. Well, that might be true of guns that are worth thousands of dollars. I mean, if you have a real 1873 Winchester that's worth $2,000, you're not going to want to go out and start, you know, sanding on it and stuff like that, okay? But if you've got a Marlin 336 and 30-30 that is, you know, from the 1960s and it's beat up and worn and there's a difference between worn. I want to say there's nothing nicer than it. I've got a Savage 99 that is worn on the bottom of the magazine area, and it's because that's the way a lot of people carry them when they're walking through the woods, okay? And so if you have a gun that is worn in a certain area like that, maybe it was from your grandfather, and you can see where he had his hand on that receiver for the 50 years that he hunted with that gun, then you don't want to go and change that, because that's part of what's important. Now, is that anything to do with the value of it? Not monetarily, but it is from a sentimental standpoint. It is from the gun culture standpoint, in that so many people will pass guns down from their great-grandfather to their grandfather to their dad to you, and hopefully you're going to pass it on to your sons or daughters, okay? And so some of those things you don't want to refinish. But if you got just a knock-around old Marlin or a knock-around old Ruger 10/22, then knock yourself out with it, okay? Well, first of all, and I've seen this before, where people have tried to, you know, oh, I'm just going to brush a coat of polyurethane on there, and they don't even disassemble the firearm, and they it looks like they painted right up to where the metal is. It's like, oh my God, this is so bad. Okay, that would be called Bubba-ing a gun. With respect to our friends down south, that they always talk about Bubba. That would be Bubba-ing a gun. Okay, so you don't want to do that. I'm talking about trying to improve and restore its looks to an original manner. And you can have so much fun with this. Start with one that if you've got a $100 old Ruger 10/22 that you only paid $50 for, have fun with it. Take it apart, okay? Take the wood. And you can, first of all, check to make sure that the bottom, that there's no rust on the bottom of the barrel, on the bottom of the receiver, things like that. Make sure that things are cleaned and lubed, okay? Then take all the furniture. It's called, the wood is called the furniture of a gun. And take all the metal pieces off of it. It may have little bands on it that where you attach a rifle sling. It may have a steel or rubber or plastic butt plate on it. Take it off, okay? Take the trigger guard off. Take it down to a bare wooden stock, okay? Then what you do is, and depending on what kind of finish is on it, you may need to use something like a paint and varnish remover kind of thing, okay? Go ahead, okay? And take the old finish off. Then what you do is, and by the way, there are some kits out there, and I normally buy this stuff myself individually, but there are some actually gun finishing kits, gun stock finishing kits made by a company called Birchwood Casey. And they have, I want to say, some neat products, and they'll give you almost everything you need to start out with in small quantities, or maybe enough to do one gun with, okay? And it'll have different sandpapers, and you don't start out really, really rough unless you've got major areas where there's big gashes in it or something. And there are things that you can do as you get better. You'll learn how to steam out a dent, okay? You know, like if you get a dent in the wood and you go, oh my goodness, I don't want to sand down through that to get rid of the dent. Well, there are ways that you can use a steam iron and a towel, and you can help raise that dent back out. We can talk about that in a future show. But you sand it down nicely. Okay, and you use, a 220 grit to start out with, and then a 400, and then a 600 grit, and you get it down to where it's pretty nice, okay? And you go, wow, this feels good. Well, you'll think it's good, but when you start putting finish on it, you'll go, oh my gosh, this wasn't good enough, okay? So you get it down to where it's sanded very nicely, and that includes some of the raising of the grain, which means, like, and getting the old dust out of it, okay? So you'll take a paper towel or a cloth that's damp, and you'll rub it over the wood, and it'll raise the grain slightly and get rough again. Well, then you can sand it off again, and then you can do it again. Do it a couple of times until you've got the wood feeling very soft, okay? Very smooth, okay? They have a product then called, and by the way, there are, grain fillers, and there's all sorts of things that you can do. But what I found, and I've done a lot of stocks on some guns, and they have come out wonderful. And I've got a few more that I'm looking to do in the future. And they have a product called Birchwood Casey True Oil. Okay. Now, that is, let me back up a minute. There are some oils when people used to use, they didn't have things that were polymers. They didn't have things that were synthetic. They just had oils, okay? So they used a thing called BLO. And it's boiled linseed oil. And you rub it on and let it dry. And you rub it on and let it dry. And then after it's dry, you sand it some more. And then you rub some more on and let it dry. And it was a very good finish, okay? And by the way, there are other oils as well that you can just, you rub it in and it soaks into the grain. Those are usually some of the finishes that you see where it looks like a natural wood finish, okay? Where it seems like the wood has just been smoothed and it's got like something rubbed in it, maybe wax or something. No, that's typically oils. Okay. And it fills the grain and it, protects it from moisture and stuff like that. Well, nowadays they've come up with, and Birchwood Casey has this product called True Oil, and it's spelled T-R-U-O-I-L. And it might even have a hyphen in there. T-R-U-O-I-L, True Oil. And it comes in little bottles and big bottles and stuff like that. And it is kind of like a blend. It is oil, like the boiled linseed oil, but it has some polymers in it, too, to help it make a hard, nice finish on the wood. Okay. And so what I do when I use that, depending on what I want for a finish on the gun, okay, I will use some coats of True Oil, three or four different coats of True Oil, and it still allows a little bit of the graining to show through and stuff like that. And but it's very, very impervious to moisture and oil and stuff. So what happens is I did, let me think, I did an old Hungarian? No, a Yugoslavian SKS in that with a teak stock. It is like the best stock that I've ever done. It came out beautiful, okay? But then, and it still has little bits of grain that you can see in it, but it does feel very sealed and stuff. Well, I then experimented on some other guns where I would do, maybe 10 coats of True Oil. And in between the coats, I would wet sand it, okay? But wet sand, and you all know what wet sanding is. You use the black garnet kind of papers that are, that they don't get mushy when they get wet. And some people wet sand cars or tractors or things that they make, maybe outside furniture, to get them nice and smooth. And when you do that, you got to use a special paper so that it doesn't dissolve. Well, the same thing is true with when you're wet sanding a stock. But I would use the paper, and I'd use like 600 grit paper, 400, 600 grit paper. And then I would actually wet sand it, but with True Oil. Not with water, with True Oil. And it eventually, after several coats of this, it is absolutely smooth. It looks like some of these fine rifle stocks that you see that you don't see any grain on them. Okay, not the ones that look real thick. I've got a rifle like that. I have a Remington 700 in 7mm Remington mag that was made in the 60s. And it has such a thick coating on it, it looks like, and they called it, believe it or not, this is kind of, sounds derogatory, kind of, but it's not, a bowling pin finish. You know how bowling pins would have like a thick plastic kind of finish? Well, some of these Remington 700s, they'd have this bowling pin kind of finish where it almost seems like the whole gun was dipped in plastic or something. I don't personally like that. Okay, so that's one of the guns I'm going to strip down and redo with the Birchwood KC True Oil. Now, why do you want to use a special product like that? Well, because it dries nicely, it finishes nicely, it sands nicely. I have got some guns that will end up eventually being refinished that I've gotten from friends that somebody has done with polyurethane. Okay. Now, polyurethane may work fine for some furniture and outdoor furniture and stuff like that, but it's not meant for gun stocks, and a lot of times people will brush it on and it ends up looking like a dimpled orange peel. Okay. And I find that very unattractive in a gun. Okay. So I want to say that's one of the reasons. Now, you can fix that by wet sanding it and things like that. But I want to say that I am so in love with this Birchwood KC True Oil that I would recommend that first. And if you want to branch out into other things, that's fine. But the thing is that if you want a stock that has, and by the way, some of those are very shiny still, you can also do that wet sanding or even dry sanding with a very, very fine steel wool. Okay? And that helps knock the shine off of it because maybe you want the gun to have more of a matte tone to it. So what you do is you do all the refinishing and you do it with Birchwood KC True Oil in it, but it still has a shine on it. So then you can use the very fine steel wool to knock down the sheen to be more of a matte finish, and then you can use stock wax on it, and the stock wax gives it just a nice deep matte finish. It's just, oh gosh, so much fun. So I've talked a long time on this, but it is fun, and that's one of these things that I'm trying to get you to think about your gun ownership and your enjoyment and involvement in the shooting sports is much more than just that 9mm semi-automatic, or maybe just more than, maybe you only shoot trap. Well, yeah, but there's a whole world out there of 22s and competitions and all sorts of fun things. I've recently enjoyed at Tri-County Sportsman's League, where I shoot, they do the bowling pin matches, and they opened them up from what used to just be pistol matches with 22s or 9s or 40s or 45s or whatever to pistol caliber carbines. And what a hoot that is. That's one of the reasons that I got that Beretta CX4, is because it'll be fun to shoot pistol caliber carbine bowling pin matches with it. I'm going to start doing that more. And that's something I've known about for years. But, you know, you got to find the time, make the time to do it, and be open-minded about some of these things. So, okay. Oh, and by the way, now we're going to talk a little bit about politics. I get a kick out of this story I was reading, that the rich and famous flock to Beverly Hills' only gun store for protection. You know, all the Hollywood elite, all the people that, they look down their nose at you and they don't, you don't need to have guns. Well, they still don't think you need to have guns because you're going to not be safe with them, but they're different. They're going to be safe. But what's happening is that the Beverly Hills guns, which is the only Beverly Hills gun shop out there, the owner said that prominent actors, real estate moguls, and film execs are among those flocking to the store for self-defense firearms. Oh, wait a minute. Probably not Alec Baldwin, okay, because I think he's had his fill of guns for a while. But, and he never pulled the trigger on that one that he shot that person with. But the thing is that suddenly, all these people who are out there, was it Seth Grogan or somebody who made a comment about, oh, all these, all the lootings and carjacking, oh, that's just part of living in a big city. You shouldn't be worried about that. Boy, did he get clobbered for that, okay? But these people are getting fed up with more and more carjackings and home invasions in their houses and stuff. So they are actually starting to be gun owners. I bet they're closet gun owners. No, not that they keep the guns in the closet, that they're closeted, that they do not want people to know that they're gun owners. There was a story about that. Matter of fact, let me see if I can find it. I'll skip down to another story. There was a story about an anti-gun lawmaker, a politician named Kimberly Lightford, This is the Illinois State Senate Majority Leader, Kimberly Lightford, okay? And they're trying to get her now to rethink her stance on gun control because she's been very, very anti-gun, okay? But maybe you just happened to hear about this week, that she and her husband were carjacked. Yeah, they were. I guess that's part of living in the Chicago area. But on December 21st, she was carjacked. And you know what? Her husband, who has a concealed carry license, saved the day because he got out of the car and the guy had a gun and stuff who was trying to carjack them. And he fired and scared the guy off. He didn't hit anything. Which, by the way, they made that point when they were talking to it about him. Well, he didn't hit anything, but he shot four or five times. I'll tell you what, he hit something. He hit a tree or a house or another car or something. Hopefully he didn't hit any people. Apparently not. But he hit something. So you got to still decide if it's safe to shoot or not. But here, this anti-gun politician whose husband was with her in the car and has a concealed carry license, saved them both as he fired on the attackers when the couple separated. What they did is she went one way, he went another, and he fired. Okay? So, yeah, I guess. Now, by the way, you might have to ask yourself, is it worth it if somebody wants your car, if they're not threatening your life, okay, or, you know, if they're holding a gun on you, then you're perfectly fine. But if they're pulling on the door handle and going, get out of the car, I want the car, and they are not displaying a firearm or something like that, then you got to ask yourself, is it worth drawing on that guy and firing to save your, your 2015 Taurus, okay, or your old Toyota Prius. Well, maybe a Prius. People have an affection for those, but or your old F-150. Okay, you can get a new car, but if they're threatening your life, then that's a whole different story. And apparently, they must have been in this case. And the guy used his firearm. And guess what? Now people are going, well, you know what, Senator Lightford, you might want to rethink your stance on gun control, seeing that your husband carries a gun concealed and used it to save your life. Okay. That's a little bit of a politics story there. By the way, the Baltimore mayor is resistant to mandatory gun minimums for carrying a gun. Well, that sounds weird. First off, why would you think that somebody should be against that? Because we even have in Michigan, I don't know if they're still enforcing it, called Mandatory 2, where if you committed a crime with a gun, you had a mandatory 2-year sentence, okay? Now, this mayor is actually making an interesting case. He is saying, I'm resistant against a mandatory minimum for carrying a gun because many people who carry guns are people who need a gun to protect themselves, maybe in the ghetto, maybe in a bad part of town, but they can't get because of Baltimore's gun laws, they can't get a concealed carry permit. So in order to be safe, they've decided, I'd rather be alive and have to face the music for carrying a gun than be dead and not carrying a gun. So he's erring on the fact that he's going, well, I think that if people just have a gun, that's not why they should have a minimum. But if they are committing a crime with a gun, then we have mandatory minimums. I got to say, that's actually some pretty smart thinking by the Baltimore mayor. Well, this is Dick Kupke at Trigger Talk Radio at Wham Talk 1600, and we'll be back in just a couple of minutes with the final segment of Trigger Talk. See you in a few. And we're back, and welcome back to the final segment of Trigger Talk Radio for today, January 1st, 2022. And, gosh, we were just talking about mandatory minimums and things like that. And I think the Baltimore mayor does maybe make a good point. It sounds like he's actually sympathetic towards people that that are not allowed to carry a gun but may need one. Maybe he's recommending a constitutional carry. Yeah, that'll never happen in Maryland. Oh, gosh. But at least he is sympathetic in saying, well, I believe that if people are convicted of crime of some sort, whether it's an armed robbery or a carjacking or whatever, and they're using a gun to commit a crime, that the mandatory minimums would be an effective deterrent. Okay. However, if somebody is walking from their apartment to their job and they get stopped and they just happen to have a firearm on them and they're an otherwise law-abiding citizen. Now, if they're a drug dealer, that's maybe all bets are off, okay? But it's a citizen who just recognizes the need for self-defense, because so many of these cities out there are absolute hell holes when it comes to crime increases. Look at Chicago, Minneapolis, New York, Baltimore, Philadelphia, Los Angeles, all of these cities. People are out there. By the way, even in Santa Monica and Beverly Hills, I guess, people are deciding they need guns to protect themselves. Okay? So maybe just having a gun isn't a mandatory minimum. Maybe it's only if you are actually committing a crime with it. I think that's a pretty good way to go. I heard a story. Oh, this is interesting. Speaking of California nut jobs, there was a guy in California who's a grocery store clerk, and he decided he was arrested on his way to the White House to kill Biden, Fauci, and Zuckerberg in an assault on the White House. He is and it even goes on, he's a 5'5", 130-pound, 25-year-old grocery clerk. Let's see, his name is Kaochu Brilliant Zizong. I don't know if he is Chinese or what, but, you know, who knows with the names that people take these days. But the last name is spelled X-I-O-N-G. So sounds like he may be an Asian immigrant of some sort there. But he was going to go to the White House to kill high-profile targets, including President Biden, Anthony Fauci, and Mark Zuckerberg, all to be carried out in a single daring mission. Well, first of all, he told the cops, and by the way, he didn't make it any further than just east of the Mississippi River after driving for 5 days from California before law enforcement pulled him over for driving aggressively. Okay. And it seems that Mr. Zizong told the cops, the law enforcement, that he planned to exploit a weakness he found in the White House's extensive security blanket that protects the commander-in-chief during his afternoon naps and other important activities. And he was going to carry out this deadly mission, and he brought a rifle and some magazines and some ammo and some body armor and a medical kit, okay? And I'm not sure why he thought that, no word yet, why he thought that Mark Zuckerberg would happen to be at the White House, but apparently thought Dr. Fauci would and Mark Zuckerberg. So yes, I guess it takes all kinds. And there are nut jobs in California, too. Okay. Let's see. Now, here's an interesting story. And it is because people worry about being on lists of things. It's like I get, and I've talked about this before, I get some gun magazines. I get American Rifleman. I get Guns and Ammo. And I get Firearm News, okay? And so I get three different ones. I'm on some mailing lists for them, okay? And I've ordered things from ammunition suppliers and I just ordered a Romeo 5 red dot scope from Amazon. So Amazon would track me as probably being a likely gun owner and stuff like that. So people worry about being on lists. And I want to say in today's world, it's probably impossible to not be on a list. Okay. My mom, I was talking to my mom. She's so disappointed. I took her home the other day. She was here with us for Christmas, and I went over to the neighbor's to pick up the mail because he had been collecting the mail. And here's this stack of mail, 6 inches tall, and there were like three things out of it worth keeping, and the rest of it were all, wounded warrior and veterans and different groups, all asking for money. And I said, boy, Dad got you on some list. Well, the same can be true for, look at the emails you get. I get all sorts of emails and you go, man, where did they get this? You know, why am I getting this in the emails? And you try to, you go to get yourself unsubscribed from these, because at the end of the emails, it usually says to unsubscribe from future mailings, click here. So you click there and then it comes back and it goes, well, what email are you emailing us from? And the point is they don't even know. They're just shooting them out there, or they're buying a list and stuff like that. They're not tracking each of these emails individually. You can't just hit respond to, because it all goes to some email list somewhere. So you have to put in your own email to get off the list. And I'm thinking, oh man, I probably just signed up for six more lists this way. So you worry about these things. Well, here's an interesting story. And a whole bunch of people got a FedExed letter to them from the ATF. Okay, so it wasn't just a letter from coming through the U.S. Postal Service. It was FedExed to them, which means it had a record of it, and it cost many dollars to send that, okay? And it said it's from an example here is in transit from FedEx, Hagerstown, Maryland, status update from the BATFE to, and it lists the guy's name. This happens to be Marlon Wilkins, and it lists his address and stuff. And it said, about a year ago, let's see, I actually have a copy of the list, okay, the actual letter, and I won't read it, but it's an official warning notice that you may be in violation of federal law. Well, why did these thousands of people or hundreds of these people get this letter that scares them and says, from the U.S. Department of Justice, Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, Firearms, and Explosives, which sounds like a good party to me, okay, why would you get a warning notice that you may be in violation of federal laws? Well, it turns out that a year earlier, there was a company called Diversified Machine, okay? And they actually manufactured suppressor components, okay? And so for those of you, a suppressor, not a silencer, because they don't make things silenced, but it does reduce the decibel levels from a gun, okay? Well, it is not illegal to build your own suppressor. But you are supposed to, even though you can manufacture one yourself, you are supposed to register it. Okay? There's more to this story, but the point is that they expect you to fill out what is called a Form 1 and mail it to them to register the silencer and pay your tax stamp. And then you receive approval for it. So it is not illegal to manufacture your own suppressor. Okay, so a suppressor is usually tubes and spacers and washers and things like that that trap and dissipate the pressure of the gases that come out behind the bullet. Okay, so anyway, what happened is they were sending a note out. They raided this place and shut them down. Okay, they even seized the website. And you know what they got along with that when they raided this place? Because they said, they were selling a thing also called a solvent trap, which people then were using as a suppressor without registering it, okay? So they came along and said, nope, we're going to shut you down, and they raided them. Then what happened was, along with shutting it down and seizing their machines and all the stuff, they also seized the mailing lists, and they seized the order list. So people who ordered parts, and you see these in the backs of magazines and stuff where they go, here's this thing that you want to use, and it's a solvent trap for when you clean your gun so that you don't drop your messy, oily, dirty gun swabs on the floor. This is a solvent trap. It screws right on the end of your gun, and it catches the solvent, okay? Or catches the little, cotton patches that you use. Well, they said, but somebody could use those as a suppressor. So they went and got the list of who are these hundreds of people who bought these solvent traps, and then they sent them a letter, a big, mean letter that says, you may be in violation of federal law. So, Biden just approved the hiring of 87,000 more IRS law enforcement guys to enforce the law. And by the way, look at the guy that they were trying, was it Chapman or whatever, they were trying to get him as the head of the ATF, and he didn't want anybody to have guns. Okay, so what is the ATF going to do when they are raiding places, when they are getting, they're trying to find out who out there owns something that they can send you a big, bad, scary letter about and try to scare you straight, apparently. Really interesting. I thought that was probably, and by the way, a suppressor, do you know that even in anti-gun England, okay, but they at gun ranges and gun stores and stuff, which they do have, because you just have to be very well licensed to be able, and you got to be one of the elite hoity-toity to have guns. But you can buy a suppressor in a bubble pack on the counter, because they recognize that it is useful to help prevent ear injuries and hearing injuries. Okay. And they don't see it as a big deal, but here in the United States, they have it as a silencer, and it's an NFA thing that you have to pay a $200 tax stamp for. So, by the way, there is a company I was listening to. What are they? It's called Silencer Central, I guess. If you go, they actually do all of the paperwork for you and stuff. I'll write that down and remember that. Talk about them in the future. Silencer Central, that they will fill out the forms and stuff. And actually, the ATF actually just made it easier. They just went to electronic forms for all of their NFA firearm stuff to actually make it easier for people to do. So on one hand, you've got the government actually trying to do something helpful. I can't believe that. They're probably just trying to draw you out to get your name on the list, right? Ha ha. But the point is that there are companies out there that work with the government to help you get it. And suppressors are becoming more and more popular as people are shooting in areas where there are, like even where I shoot at Tri-County out here, we've got 58 acres out in, it was in the country when it was formed in 1938, okay, 38 or 39. But now there's an awful lot of housing around it. So if people are shooting suppressed, it's actually nicer on the neighbors. So, and other things like people that hog hunt and stuff, it's open season on feral hogs all year long. And people can shoot them at night, too. So having suppressed firearms makes sense for those. So so they're trying to make it easier for people to have legitimate uses for it. But at the same time, they're out there sending big, scary notices to people about you may be in violation of federal law. Well, what if somebody just bought some of these pieces and they're going to make one and they're going to fill out a form one? Then they've just, you know, spent several dollars and got you on a bad guy list for something you intended to do. They're assuming you're going to be unlawful, as opposed to, I thought you're supposed to be innocent until proven guilty, but apparently not with the ATF, okay? Let's see. What's the next story I wanted to talk about? Oh, this was a gun review I was reading, and I think I got a couple gun reviews. Let me look to see. And part of it is because, yeah, I already talked about the Marlin. Part of it was because I had originally found a list of the guns.com best-selling guns of 2021. Now, this is a good example of make sure you understand what you are reading when you read it, okay? There is, I want to say, the 10 best selling handguns of 2021. Well, you might sit there and think, well, my goodness, that that should have an awful lot of guns. There are different kinds of guns and different calibers and all this kind of stuff out there. And I go through that list, and it is a Glock 19, a Glock 19 Gen 5. A Glock this and that, a Glock this, you know, a Glock, and you go through it, and they're all, almost all, by the way, they were, 8 out of 10 were 9 millimeters, and 8 out of 10 were Glocks, and the other two were Glock, a 10 millimeter and a Glock, 22, the Glock 44, model 44, and I thought, this can't be right. And then I looked, they had their the top 10 rifles that people bought. And then it's got the top 10 shotguns that people bought. Now, there's a little more diversity in that. But you got to recognize that this information is coming from a website that essentially sells mostly tactical stuff. So you're not going to see a single revolver on that list. You're not going to see a single, and by the way, they apparently promote Glocks because you do see two Tauruses, okay? But everything else is Glocks, okay? Well, there's a whole world out there of Sig Sauers and Wilson Combats and Springfield Armories and stuff like that. So the reason I wrote that, now they were a little more diverse when it came to rifles. They talked Smith & Wesson, M&Ps, Sports, Ruger AR-15s, let's see, a Kel-Tec Sub 2000, a Henry AR-7, which is the outstanding survival rifle, and a Diamondback DB-15, and a Sig Sauer M400. So I got to say, they were a little more diverse in their rifles, and even more so in their shotguns. They got into an El Cheapo one, a G-Force Arms Tactical, which is only like a $299 gun, okay? But then they go right on into their other ones that are thousands of dollars. But they do mention the Mossberg Maverick 88 and the Mossberg 590 and a Kel-Tec K50 and stuff like that. That's a $1,000 shotgun. But the thing is that virtually everything they're talking about is tactical stuff. And so I want to say, make sure that when you read these articles, you take a look at where the information's coming from, because I do a lot of reading, and even me, I thought, oh, well, this will be interesting. What were the top-selling guns? Well, you're actually going to have to get some real sales numbers to understand what the best-selling guns are, not just at one website that focuses on tactical stuff. Or, I want to say, look at all the hunting rifles, and the long-range rifles and all these things. They're not even listed there. And it's because they don't sell them at guns.com. So at any rate, I thought that was interesting. But it did remind me, too, I went back and looked at this one gun that they had. And I want to say I'm actually intrigued by them, because I've seen them at a reasonable price, and they have a decent reputation. And I want to say you almost have to consider them in that realm of a gun that if it works great, use it, and if it doesn't work or something goes wrong with it, then it's a throwaway. Okay, and I don't mean throw away like toss it or leave it at a scene or something like that. I'm talking like, okay, you may not be able to get a part for it eventually. It might be a good backup. And by the way, it appears to be very reliable and stuff, but it's not a big brand company, and it's called SCCY, okay, Sky. And they've got some... One called a DVG-1, and they have a couple other Skies that I see all the time on one of the lists that I get emails from is like Rural King Guns and stuff like that. They are selling these things all the time for like $199, $249, $279 with a Crimson Trace red dot on it. I mean, it's pretty amazing. And apparently they are, and it's a striker-fired gun, not a hammer-fired, so it's got a decent trigger. And it mentions that it's got some, there's a lot of holsters made for it, that because apparently people enjoy and like these guns, and they do enjoy a good reputation out there. They've only been around 6 or 7 years from what I know, but when you're looking at guns these days, not everybody can afford $650 for a Glock, or $699 for a SIG P365 or something like that. And so this one's got a it's got a history. A company called Roebuck came out with what's called the quad lock chamber and stuff. I mean, it's got a decent history to it. And so I'm thinking I would not mind getting one of these just to have as a small 9mm to as a backup. It is meant to be it's a 10 plus 1, so it's just in the realm of the same kind of size that everybody's making these days, but it is a lot cheaper, anywhere from $199 to $260. So, ergonomically, it's 4.5 stars. Reliability, it's a 5 star. It worked perfect. Accuracy, they said it's a 7-yard gun. 3-inch group at 7 yards, 2-inch group at 7 yards. Pretty decent gun. I think I may have, that might be on my list of, you know, when it says get a different gun. Well, when I said, buy something you don't normally have, I don't have any cheap nines. That would be a different thing. I might get one of those, and I'll give you a report on it in the future. Well, this is it for the first show of the year. This is Dick Kupke at Trigger Talk Radio here at Wham Talk 1600 AM and 92.7 FM. I hope you have a good holiday today and a good rest of the year, and I'll see you next week.